Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends live musical animal zoo extravaganza. The Morning Zoo Crew. That's us. We're not really Morning Zoo Crew radio, but we make zoo noises, apparently. So
hey, it's morning.
It is morning. It's not morning for you. It's, you East Coasters with your afternoon drive time, your afternoon drive-by time radio. This is Michael Dean, the Freedom The freaky freedom guy. I don't even know. All right. I forget the names. I am the mighty
Iron Hamster.
Thank you. And on the other end of the ear tubes, calling from Maine, we have Chandler Bing. No, Chandler St. Pierre.
No. That's a sin.
That's a sin. What is your wrestling animal name, sir?
My wrestling animal name is the Jabbering Coon Cat.
Ah, yes. And then we have Mr. Garrett Fox. What is your wrestling animal name, sir?
This is the Freedom Fox here.
Yeah, excellent. So we're going to get to this in a minute, but I just want to say Chandler got hassled by the cops for doing nothing. And he's so modest. He's so modest. Like, you know, to me, that makes him a rock star for a minute. And he's like, you know, I found something today. Someone sent me about the cops hassling somebody somewhere who, you know, didn't do anything wrong. And I was like, hey, that's a really good news piece. And then Chandler's like, yeah, I got hassled by the cops last night. I don't know if we need to talk about it. I'm like, dude, no, you talk about it. I mean, think about how many people that get hassled by the cops and call in and try to get on radio. Like, I'm going to tell the world. And you're on radio. And you're like, I don't know. You're so modest, man. All right.
Well, thank you.
Yep. So my wife, DJ, and I wrote this song. Deborah Jean and I wrote this song. It's actually a cover of a 60s song called Going Up the Country by the band Canned Heat. And if you want to know more about Canned Heat and their connections with the CIA and Charles Manson, you can read the book I was reading yesterday, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, which I just finished.
It's great.
You reading it?
Well, I listened. The guy that wrote the book, he has a
online. A lot of it's online. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done a couple of talk shows, and I happened to catch him, and I read the whole thing online. It was amazing.
Yeah. My problem with that book, I just finished it. It doesn't really have an ending. It kind of peters out. It's kind of like you can tell that it was a series of chapters or long blog posts online, and then they turned it into a book, which he talks about in the foreword. But it doesn't really. Even so, he could have made it have, you know, some kind of redemption in the third act or some kind of completion. It's like, you know, there's a chapter that's the second to last chapter, and you think it's going to be like the next one's going to be the whole conclusion and everything. The next one is completely unrelated. It's about, you know, the whole book is about the music scene in the 60s and how there may have been government involvement. And At least in propagating LSD to keep people from becoming too powerful. And that's what I believe. But, you know, to keep people from overthrowing the government, basically, or to cut down the anti-war movement. But I believe that part. I don't know if I believe the part about, you know, like somebody said, those bands were too good for the government to have been able to pick the winners. You know, they wouldn't do it that well. But yeah, the book just kind of peters out, man, at the end. And this is not a spoiler alert. This is a be prepared to be disappointed spoiler alert. The last chapter isn't about music at all. It's about some, you know, true crime murder mystery in L.A., you know, thing that actually happened and was maybe blamed on the wrong person that has nothing to do with the whole premise of the book except that the body was dumped. One of them was dumped kind of near Laurel Canyon, which is the staging area for the whole book. And then at the end of that chapter, it's like, if you want to read more, read my previous book on crime. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, the last chapter that should have been the conclusion is just an ad for your last book. That's weak. Weak sauce, man. But overall, I enjoyed it, and it is a good book. All right, I'm going to play this short song, Going Up the Hamster. The Hamster is my wife and my nickname for New Hampshire. We wrote this after coming back from the Pork Fest Freedom Festival, where both of my co-hosts and most of my other co-hosts were there. And we had a great old time. And if you're a freedom-loving person, I recommend you go to P-O-R-C-F-E-S-T, Pork Fest, not pork with a K, but pork with a C, fest.com. check it all out and maybe join us there next year. It's pretty cool. Okay, so I'm going to play Going Up the Hamster. Here we go.
Burns.
Baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going up the hamster. Baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going to some place where freedom lives today. I'm going where the big corn spins like cash. I'm going where the big corn spins like cash. Start a mind and pool, sin rush all the time. I'm gonna leave this journey, got to get away. I'm gonna leave this journey, got to get away. All this world of laws, man, you know I sure can't stay. Now baby, pack your rifle and we'll hit the road today. Just exactly what we'll do, I cannot say. But we might even secede the USA. Liberty's a brand new game that I just wanna play. No use to steal a voting for stealing and lying. The free state's our new home.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Man, DJ can sing.
Yeah, she can. She doesn't do it much, but we've recorded a few songs before, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. The whistling, you know, in the original song Going Up the Country by Canned Heat, it's flute. And I was going to play it on guitar. But, you know, first I laid down the drums and the bass and the rhythm guitar, and then was recording DJ's vocals, and I had to have a placeholder there so she'd know where to come in those two times. So I just whistled, and then when we were done, I was like, I'm not going to do that over on guitar. It sounds better. You know, it sounds more like a flute. It sounds funny. It sounds cheesy. I like it. It was fun, man. I like doing projects like that.
So what did you use to make that song?
Notes.
What do you mean? Killing me. What program did you use to mix it up?
I used acid to make that.
Of course, you did.
I don't mean the drug that was very prevalent, probably in the writing of that song in the 60s and throughout the book, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon. There's a program called Sony Acid. It's made by the Sony Giganto Corporation that runs the world and, you know, feeds you all.
It'll always be Sonic Foundry.
It is. It was originally Sonic Foundry. I was using it when it was Sonic Foundry, and you, Sony, are no Sonic Foundry. Yeah, they just bought it out. Yep. Yeah, I use three programs by them. Acid, Vegas, and what's the other one? Oh, SoundForge.
I edit
every Freedom Fiend show in SoundForge, and I use SoundForge 8. I went up to 9 and didn't love
it.
It's
horrible.
Went back to 8. You know, it's one of those software bloatware things of where, you know, the Peter principle, you know, you get advanced in an organization until you reach your point of incompetence and then stay there. And so I went back to the previous version. So Chandler, what did the police do to you? What did the state do to you yesterday?
Well, some friends of mine went to this thing called the Redneck Olympics yesterday.
And, wait, tell us about that.
Basically, it's really cool. It's a guy, he owns a bunch of property out in Hebron, Maine. And I guess there's like a group that puts it on, and he leases his property for the weekend. And they have mud runs and, you know, all kinds of different stuff. They have bands and food tents, just a typical festival thing. Really small. It's probably about 2,000 or 3,000 people there, maybe.
Really small? And,
well, small by some of the festivals I've been to.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, really good time.
I think 2,000 is about the most, though, give or take. I think that's the most people you can have at an event that I've been to where it still can be free of cops and free of hassles.
Yeah, it was very much the same size and scale as Pork Fest, but there was a much greater area. There was a couple of, like, the front field was where the stages and the food tents and the vending tents were, and then they had the giant mud pit. I posted a bunch of pictures on Facebook. Then there was a backfield, and they were giving everyone rides on four-wheelers and dirt bikes. Like, they had a four-wheeler that had a trailer with a picnic table on the back of it. That was cool. Yeah. It was definitely very redneck. Really cool. So anyway, we're driving home, and without getting into too many details, we got pulled over by a state trooper. And
give me some details. Like, was there a reason to get pulled over in their mind?
Well, yeah, apparently the driver was driving, you know, a little erratic, which may or may not have been the case. I didn't notice it. I happened to be the only, like, sober person in the car at the time.
You should have been driving. I mean, isn't that the sober person's job?
Well, no, the driver was sober, but he had consumed some vegetation.
Okay. I still, you know, I haven't taken any drugs or had a drink in 20 years, and I would definitely end up being the designated driver in that. And that's not just a legal thing. It's like, I think that makes sense. But okay,
yeah,
go on.
In an ideal world, that would have happened. Yeah. So, you know, the cop pulls us over, and the guy that was driving was very, you know, formal and polite, and talked to him. And the cop was like, well, I can smell marijuana, or, and do you have any? One thing I did notice is that a lot of the people in the car were not aware of their rights and were obviously very afraid and immediately copped to a lot of stuff. And the cop was like, look, I don't care if you've got drugs in the car, you know, trying to play Mr. Nice Guy and all that stuff. So anyway, the guy didn't have a license. We didn't know this at the time, which was, was not good. Was not good. So anyway,
for anybody listening going like, well, it sounds like there was reason to be hassled by the cops. This story is going to go over the break and come back, and it goes to a second location where there's none of that and no vehicle. Just saying that. So this isn't even the biggest part of it yet. Okay, go on.
So anyway, when we get back from the break, I will tell you more about how cops use command presence to deal with average citizens.
Presence. Yes, they want you quaking in your boots. It's not like it's not Mayberry RFD. Didn't that take place in Maine? Supposedly?
No, that was...
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit freestatewyoming.org.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bathroom. No, from the sounds like a bathroom. From a windowless bunker. And we're talking to Chandler St. Pierre, and he's telling us about the police. He hung out with some polices yesterday. What happened,
sir?
Oh, it
was awesome. So anyway, the first thing the cop did after he asked the driver to leave the car was he's like, you all need to put your hands on, you know, the headrests or the front dashboards, whatever. And he was very insistent with that stern voice, and you need to do this. And like, you know, me, I was leaning my head up against the window. I was tired. I just wanted to go to sleep. And he made a point of making sure that I put my hands up. So they emptied the car one by one. And well, first off, while they were still talking, I opened the car door a little bit to peek my head out to talk to the cop, and he screamed at me, I said, get back in the car. And it was about this time that he had called another state trooper. And it was kind of funny, the back and forth between them. The original one that pulled us over was the Marine, stern, mean type. And the second cop that showed up was a very young guy who, by the way, as we were walking off, I told him he should find a new line of work. And he just kind of looked at me. He wasn't offended, you know. And so he was the nice cop. He played the good cop. So they did the good cop, bad cop.
I wonder if when the guy called in, if he knew who was going to come. I wonder if he was like, I'm bad cop. I need to call good cop for this, for what I need to do.
I think that's what it was, because this guy was young, obviously inexperienced, and he was very polite. I will give this cop credit. He was very polite and kind. He didn't try to exert that command authority that the other one was doing, and I think that kind of upset.
Think about how confusing a good cop, bad cop situation is, and how effective it is at just disarming people into doing bidding. Like somebody yells at you and is mean to you, and then suddenly someone is nice to you, and you're like, that person you'll tell anything to. You know,
it's a plot. Yeah, there's a lot. Like I was telling you,
psychological warfare. That's what I'm saying.
It is. It is, because I was sitting there. Well, I was standing the whole time. I'll get to that. And I was observing, very quiet. I had to fight the anarchic urges within me to make my opinion known. And I just stood there quietly.
You had to fight your urges to be human.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Basically, that's what it came down to. And I just observed. And they did. There was a lot of psychology involved. Like when they issued the sobriety test, which the driver passed, I noticed how they kept giving him instructions off and on, and just really scattered. And the whole point of that is to make the guy mess up so that they can say, oh, you're intoxicated.
Well,
when he clearly
was.
The
thing about police is, in almost all situations, I mean, their goal, well, put it this way, their training is to get you into a cage. That is the point of their training. Or to get them to a point where they're allowed to put you in a cage and they can make decisions whether to put you in a cage or not. Their whole training is about getting you guilty of a crime, because you'd be astonished at how much of a policeman or any law enforcement person at any level, from, you know, local to federal, you'd be astonished at how much of them keeping their job, progressing in their job, or even keeping their job depends on number of arrests and numbers of tickets. And
I've had cops tell me that they have quotas.
Yeah, well,
it's quite obvious.
And in a lot of cases, they don't have literal quotas, because quotas are illegal in some ways, in some situations, but they still have quotas. Yeah, like if a cop doesn't have a quota legal, you know, doesn't have a quota on paper, but doesn't produce arrests and, you know, I mean, literally, like, think about this, like, if police actually made a difference in crime rates like they always claim to, they would arrest less people. But they never arrest less people because they'll lose their job, you know?
And I was thinking about how this whole situation would have gone down in LibPair. And it would have gone down quite differently.
In a libertarian paradise. So in a libertarian paradise, they would have said, sir, I believe you may be intoxicated. Your one friend here is not. He should drive. Have a pleasant day. And would you like me to accompany you to a stop so we can have someone, you can, you know, whatever. I mean, they would be, they'd help you.
Well, I'm sure you remember.
If they were really about safety, they'd help you.
That's right. I'm sure, and I'll go into this more as we go with the story, but I'm sure you remember the days when cops used to actually drive people home.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they don't do that.
I've seen when I was a kid, we had a neighbor across the street down one that was a drunk. I remember the cops bringing him home, you know, like his wife sternly, you know, crying in her coat out there, like them bringing him home, like not arresting him, not in cuffs, just he was too drunk to drive. They brought him home.
Yes.
We'll be back with more on how things should be versus how they are after this trip to the free market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, It's at the Circle Pines Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com. Freedom Fiends on the radio, bringing you actual liberty, not the left-right continuum. You know, I made a point yesterday that I'd like to reiterate for anybody who didn't hear it. One of my tests for what's true and what's right. Fox News and CNN, or let's say Fox News and MSNBC, right-wing versus left-wing. They're both screeching all the time. They're both right once in a while. But they're both, you know, they kind of both miss the whole point, which is actual liberty and actual self-ownership and actually keeping all your money. Whereas both of them are like, we don't like the other taxes that pay for the things we don't like. That's kind of, you know, I think that a lot of people think a law is unconstitutional if they don't agree with it.
Yes.
Because a lot of things people say are unconstitutional are actually constitutional, because the Constitution, for the most part, except for the Bill of Rights, most of it says the government can do whatever they want and lay and collect taxes. Collect taxes. Yeah. But, if you want to know if you want an indicator of something that you know you should be against, anything that Fox News and MSNBC agree on, be very afraid.
Yeah.
All right. So Chandler was telling us about getting pulled over by the police. Rural Maine.
Yeah, that's the key word. We're in rural Maine, and it's about 1:30 in the morning. So, and mind you, I'm in a t-shirt, freezing. So the cop,
they don't care.
They don't care. They absolutely don't. And the cop pulls us out one by one. And of course, you guys know what I look like. You look like a hippie.
You look like
one of those filthy hippies,
Jimmy Carl Black, the Indian of the group from Frank Zappa's group.
Yes. So, lean up against the car, spread your legs. And apparently
before we get letters saying you used the word Indian, that was the thing on Frank Zappa. There was a guy that was Native American in the group, and he always had the thing on the records where he'd say, "Hi, boys and girls, I'm Jimmy Carl Black, and I'm the Indian of the group." And you're part Native American, and you look like Jimmy Carl Black. You have long hair. You're a good looking, tall, kind of studly looking male. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So don't think we haven't noticed.
Get up against the car, spread your arms and legs. And apparently I didn't spread my legs enough, which kind of creeped me out. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But, one of the things I think I mentioned before, everyone with the psychology of what was going on, everyone was talking to the cops, and I'm just shaking my head going, never talk to a cop, never volunteer information. And people were, because, you know, we'll get in less trouble. No, that's not how it works. So the cops being really aggressive, patting me down, I'm like, look, man, you ain't going to find any drugs. I smell pot smoke, and I'm sure you have some. I'm like, look, man, I don't do drugs, but, do your thing, whatever. So,
if
and he's
people
like,
want
yeah,
to know what
I
you
will.
Look like, go to the Freedom Fiend site. At the top is a picture from Porkfest of most of the co-hosts. And Chandler is the guy standing directly behind DJ, behind my wife and I, in the middle. He's like literally in the back, in the middle, towering over everyone else. The guy with long hair. That's him.
Right next to me.
Yep, between you and Ben Stone, the bad Quaker.
Yes, sir. So anyway, he finishes his thing. And what they did, as each person was removed from the car and searched, they made us stand 5 feet in front of the car and then 5 feet apart from each other, facing front. We were not allowed to turn around, and we got yelled at, because a couple of my friends were just like, whatever. And every time
somebody
turned around,
you know, sometimes they shoot people in the back in that pose too, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that was running through my mind. And the other thing that was running through my mind is, thank God I wasn't carrying my gun that day. Like, I carry my gun, you know me, I carry my gun everywhere. And, you know, there was supposed to be no firearms at this event. So I said, okay, I'll, you know, I respect that.
Yeah, and it's legal to carry a gun, but if they found weed on someone else in the car, they probably would charge you with, there's a weird crime. It's like having a gun in the presence of drugs.
Of drugs,
like,
yeah.
Like, you didn't even know, and you could probably lose your legal right to carry for that.
Yeah, I could have. So thank God. And like I said, I wasn't high, wasn't drunk, had no drugs, of course. So they line us up in the street and 5 feet apart and continually yelling at us to face forward, you know, no talking.
And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is like that law is immoral. I don't know if it's unconstitutional. It's probably constitutional, although.
Oh, they can. Yeah, they can do whatever they want because it's a dangerous situation.
I mean, the thing is, though, like, you know, let's say you were driving and you were the designated driver and everyone else was high and maybe someone had some pot on them. Don't high people deserve someone who's, you know, sober and designated to drive and protect them?
Exactly. Well, the guy that was driving, that's the first thing he said. He was like, look, you know, I didn't want these people driving because they're drunk and I want them to get home safely. So it doesn't matter. You have committed a crime. You are and that's the thing. Along with the command presence that they're taught to use, they are taught to view everyone as a potential life-threatening enemy, not just an enemy of the state.
And that's not how it was when I was a kid, too.
No. My uncle was a cop, and that is totally not how it was. So we're standing out there, and they're going through the whole rigmarole. Now, mind you, we are not allowed to go back in the car to get our cigarettes, coats, anything. I'm standing out there and I'm asking the cop, because I think one of the girls had an extra hoodie, and I was like, can you go in the car and get me a hoodie? I'm freezing. You know, it was cold last night. It was like in the 40s, maybe 50s, and I was freezing. I was in a t-shirt and sandals, and they never did, and they, you know, they're whatever. So come, one of the kids pulled out his cell phone. I had my cell phone out the whole time. I had it in my hand, but we weren't allowed to put our hands in our pockets, and the kid's cell phone went off and he answered it and the cop screamed at him, put that phone away right now or I'll arrest you. And I'm like, really? Really? Can you state the crime, please? Didn't. Yeah, he didn't like that. Not at all. So anyway, they arrested the driver and the vehicle was registered in his girlfriend's name or whatever. So you would think that they would be like, all right, one of you is sober. You can take the vehicle and get home and stay off the roads and consider yourselves lucky. They said, nope, we're going to impound the car because it was something in commission of a crime. I can't remember exactly how he said it. And we're like, okay.
The car is guilty.
Yeah, the car is guilty. We're in wherever it was, Turner, Maine, in the middle of nowhere. We have very little money. How are we supposed to get home? He's like, well, I'll call you a cab if you want. And Maine's like Montana, man. If you're in the middle of nowhere, a cab to town, it's going to cost you $100. And with five people, it ain't happening. But they had no remorse whatsoever. So we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we're like, are we free to go? He's like, yep. And we start walking back towards the car to go back down the road. And he screams at us. He's like, you cross the street. You are not allowed to approach the vehicle. And really? Really? I mean, these guys were unbelievable. And of course, like I've said before, it was state troopers. I have no love for any police officers, law enforcement, but the state troopers tend to be the most stern and the worst.
I've heard,
and
I don't know, specifically about Maine. I've heard they're pretty problematic.
Yeah, they are. And do you know, a lot of people don't know this. Do you know what the state troopers were actually started for?
Protecting the governor?
Yes. They were originally the governor's.
Guess. That was a guess.
Yeah, I think we might have talked about it on a previous show, but they were actually the governor's private police force before they got institutionalized as the state police.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just really bogus, you know, that there was no harm done. There was, I mean, yes, I guess there was no victim. Yes, by legal standards, I suppose there was a crime, but we were all just trying to get home. We were all tired. All we wanted to do was go home and sleep. And, you know, we ended up having to, you know, luckily we got a ride, but it was not fun.
You ended up, there was a second scene though. You ended up at a convenience store and then there were more cops, right?
Yes. So we started walking down the road and this guy graciously picked us up and brought us down the road quite a ways. And we stopped at a convenience store because we figured that would be easier for our ride to find us. And we went in and, you know, got some Gatorade and packed smokes or whatever and came out. And we sat at the end of the driveway on a rock, and two sheriffs stopped separately and asked us what we were doing there. And you know, me, at this point, I am ready to explode. I just wanted to go off. And luckily, my friend walked up and again, volunteered all kinds of information. Yeah, I told him the whole story. And he's like, so they already have your names? And she's like, yeah, they have our names. And, you know, we're just waiting for a ride. And we went through that twice. You know, it's like, and I get it. Like in some areas, in more urban areas, there are certain people that the cops may be a little more suspicious of. But when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you got a bunch of hippies, and then the rest of my friends are, you know, average, they don't look, you know, they just look average. We're definitely not threatening. That's for sure.
Well, you're people who are in both situations, you know, you're people who, I don't even know what you're doing. You were just, you know, it kind of reminds me of Highwaymen. It's like you're minding your business in both situations. And, you know, in the first situation, you were basically robbed at gunpoint. You know, they didn't point a gun at your head, but they had guns and would have pointed them at your head if you'd resisted.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And, you know, in the second situation, they were like sniffing you out to see what they could do with you. And you were just people at a store. And that's all.
And you know what's crazy, too, to me? When I remember growing up, when I actually used to consume certain vegetation and other substances, I would walk around town all night long, just, you know, bum it. I'd go to Dunkin' Donuts and sit. I'd go sit in the park. You know, I'd at 2 a.m. I never got I rarely got hassled back then. And just to see over the last 15 years how the police state has grown and intensified, it troubles me greatly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, and they try to teach little kids the police are your friends, and that may have been true 30 years ago, but
it doesn't feel
like it anymore. You know, there was a case, there was a woman in New York City, somebody called 911 this week over a domestic quarrel. Police went to the wrong apartment in Brooklyn, knocked on the door, you know, woman, the police came in, dragged a topless woman into the hallway and like left her there, like, you know, eight cops dragged her out. And meanwhile, her like elderly mother starts having an asthma attack and needs her oxygen, and they're pretty slow at getting it to her. This kind of stuff happens all the time. Yeah, she passed out. This kind of stuff happens all the time in America, in all countries probably.
And it's not protect and serve anymore. And it's very sad, you know. And if there are good cops out there, I know we've had this discussion before, you know, why aren't they arresting the bad cops? And why aren't they making their public image is so tainted right now? That's why the cops are taught now that everyone's an enemy, because nobody likes cops. I mean, think about it.
We're the enemy for talking about it. I wouldn't be surprised if we get targeted for talking about it, because they don't want people to know this. I mean, we're just stating, we're stating absolute facts. You know, you can go, anybody can go on YouTube and search, you know, search the term cop beats up, and it'll autofill, you know, child, grandmother, dog, etc., you know?
I mean, I was really nervous last night, the way the cop was walking around with his hand at his side all the time.
Yeah,
you know, it was very troubling.
He's ready to shoot somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Police State USA, man. I want a different planet. That's what I want.
Here, here.
You too, brother.
And if we keep broadcasting on radio, the aliens will hear us and come take us away.
I can't wait.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
When I found the Free State Project, I knew it was the key to achieving liberty in my lifetime. It's awesome to be surrounded by like-minded, freedom-loving activists who've moved here to New Hampshire. From politics to civil disobedience, we have it all. Where I came from, it felt that no matter what I did, liberty was dying. Perhaps you feel the same way? Call 888-377-2515 now to learn more about the Free State Project. That's 888-377-2515 or visit freestateproject.org.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
the moral of the story on the Freedom Fiends for the last three segments was if you're gonna drink, do it at home. That's one of the morals of the story. Yep. When I was drinking 20 years ago, I didn't like going to bars. I like drinking at home because my house was always more fun than a bar, and had only the coolest people you'd have at a bar without the idiots. And it's cheaper, man, and you're less likely to get hassled. But the real moral of the story is people should be able to drive and go places and do things without being hassled. And if police do need to pull someone over or feel they need to, there shouldn't need to be the command presence intimidation where they just try to wreck your day and steal your stuff when there's really no victim. That's the moral. So, yeah.
They should remember their motto, protect and serve. Come on. We needed some comic relief.
Yes.
And they should fix Facebook when it goes down.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, police, in case people think we're only picking on police, we're going to pick on citizens here for a minute because some of them are pretty darn stupid. And the police, I hate to say it, but in this story we're going to do right now, the police were actually smarter than some of the non-police. So go ahead.
This is hilarious. I can't believe I'm reading this, but apparently,
okay, where is it from? Good radio. What's it from?
Where are these guys from? Crescenta Valley.
And this is from Fortune magazine. Fortune, which is a mainstream economic magazine, and they probably check their sources. So go ahead. Okay.
All right, so the headline is, Facebook users dial 911 over social network outage.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So it's a short article. I'm going to roll through this real quick. When Facebook crashes, what's a disgruntled user to do? For some, it means calling the authorities, apparently. So I kind of like the response that Sergeant Brink has. He hashtags Facebook on Twitter and says, Facebook is not a law enforcement issue. Please don't call us about it being down. We don't know when Facebook will be back up. I really want to know how this phone conversation went.
I also really want to know if Sergeant Brink is like the younger, hipper guy there that actually knows how to hashtag something, you know? Like,
apparently so.
I'm kind of surprised a cop knew how to hashtag something, but... Because, you know, we've seen the horrible, horrible misfires of police trying to do social networking, you know, where they're like, please tweet photos of the NYPD.
Oh, yeah.
Love the NYPD. And then there's all these photos of, like, people being beaten up by the NYPD. Yeah.
Baltimore just did that once. They got, apparently, I think it was like 10,000 likes or follows on Twitter or something. So they made this video and had these little signs printed out with all these cops and, you know, office workers and stuff to this song called We're So Happy or something. I'm Feeling Happy. And it quickly got turned into another video of We Are Trigger Happy and showed all of these videos and clips of cops beating up people and drawing their weapons.
Did anyone put in any scenes from the show The Wire, which take place is Baltimore police beating people up mostly?
I did not catch any of that. This was actual footage from what really goes on out here. But I got to read this one paragraph of the article because this just goes to show how society is like totally confused about what the police are supposed to be there for and what they are actually calling them for. This says this is coming from the cops. They say, we get phone calls all the time, whether it being Facebook going down, people getting wrong orders at fast food restaurants, or their cable TV went out. But with the Facebook in particular, we get calls probably because it's such a widely used thing. And so I think that's something that we wanted to get into there, Michael.
Yeah. Before we get into that, I want to talk about the last time I called the police, which was 7 or 8 years ago when we still lived in Southern California, in Agora Hills, which is about 33 miles outside of L.A. I called the non-emergency number. I didn't call 911. That's why, first place, I'm smarter than these people.
Right.
I called the police because there was a helicopter hovering about 500 feet over my house for about a half hour. I mean, it was creepy. It was like close enough that I could see like individual bolts on the bottom of the thing. And they said, yeah, a lot of people have been calling. We don't know what it is. And then like immediately the helicopter just took off. And I found out later the sheriffs were just up there watching the local high school football team game.
Oh, wow.
From the air. Like hovering over our house, you know?
And that's what your taxpayer dollars are going to.
Yep.
That's disturbance of the peace right there.
They were disturbing my peace. I mean, if that thing had failed, it would have fallen and crushed me, you know, crushed my house. All right, so we'll be back in hour two talking about Future Shock. Future Shock. Google that term. We're going to talk about the book Future Shock. Wikipedia that, people. Do your research. Don't take my word for it. There's something called Future Shock. It's a book from the 70s that I read, and it's great, and it was very prescient. It predicted a lot of what's happening now. Didn't quite say people would call the police over Facebook being down, but probably implied it. All right.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Libertarians. Libertarians are making a difference. At least we're getting the attention of and irking the right wing and the left wing, because they all want control. They say they don't. They both say they want freedom in different ways, but they both want to use government guns pointed at your head to get their freedoms, or what they think are freedoms. Here are two examples before we go into Future Shock of how libertarians are making a difference. And you can tell because they were ignored. We were ignored for decades. And I'm not talking about Libertarian Party. I'm talking about people that are truly libertarian to their core of cores. It's not a political solution. The Libertarian Party is a unwinnable political solution. Our solution is educational, man. It's about saying no. It's about more people saying no. Here's two examples. One is yesterday we talked about how the Daily Kos had an article about libertarian beaches in Florida that can kill you, and they weren't really libertarian. They were still government controlled, but you know, they weren't testing the water often enough for people who don't take personal responsibility, according to this article. So they're calling him libertarian. They're complaining about him. Now, more accurate one is yesterday Rush Limbaugh was screeching about libertarians blaming the U.S. in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now, I wonder if he's talking about the Freedom Fiends, because I really haven't heard have heard people, but not on radio. And, you know, we're literally, like, there are literally stations where Rush Limbaugh plays and then the Freedom Fiends play, where, like, this is kind of cool, where actually, like, the stations have had me make liners. So, like, in the last break of Rush's Week in Review, it says, it's my voice saying, you're listening to Rush's Week in Review. Stick around for the Freedom Fiends on KSZL or whatever, you know? and I've heard those streaming. You know, I'm not in those towns, but I've heard them streaming. It's pretty cool. So wondering if he's talking about us.
Well, you know, I think he may be. And one of the other things he's mentioning, I believe, there was an article that's been floating around about how the new generation in America is basically tired of the stranglehold that the Israeli lobby has on the American government. And more and more people are sympathizing with the Palestinians and saying, no, we shouldn't be sending all these weapons and aid to kill people, you know, for Israel to use to kill people. And it's become kind of a shift, and it's the old guard that are still defending those policies, whereas our generation is kind of coming around.
Yeah, and that's one of those situations where you can know what's the right thing to do and the right thing to back based on – that's one of those situations where Fox and MSNBC agree. They're both adamantly pro-Israel. And I'm not talking – this is not a Jewish thing. This is a state thing.
Of Israel.
Yeah, and people left and right, and especially right, tend to conflate the people of an area with the government of an area. Like, you know, I've heard right-wingers say, we need to bomb Iran before Iran gets the bomb. And it's like – most people in Iran, or a lot of people in Iran, don't support what their government does.
No. I did a commentary on Facebook and Twitter last week because I was in the Dunkin' Donuts and I was forced to watch Fox News. And then I went to another place and was forced to watch CNN. And you're right, there was no difference. And I noticed that all they were doing was making subjective statements and basically making Israel look good.
Yeah.
And they were generalizing all Palestinians.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I don't understand how people can buy this sort of thing anymore. And I found it interesting. There was a mass protest in Tel Aviv of Israelis protesting the government's actions towards the Palestinians. And it got no mainstream media coverage.
Yep. And you hear about it from the Twitters. And speaking of stuff on the internet, Davi Barker, our co-host, one of our wonderful co-hosts, has an audiobook out of his book, Authoritarian Sociopathy, which is a book about, this command presence thing that governments want to have, where they want to scare everybody, whether it's some hippies driving back from the Redneck Festival on the side of the road, or whether it's, you know, entire peoples like Palestine. And if you want to get a free copy of this audiobook, send an email. We've worked out a deal with them. Send an email to fiends, that's Foxtrot Echo Echo November Sierra. Send an email to fiends@fpp.cc. And that's FPP like fiends papa papa dot Charlie Charlie. So that's fiends@fpp.cc. And that's Free Press Publications is fpp.cc. So yeah, go ahead and get yourself a free copy of the audiobook of Authoritarian Sociopathy, read by Daryl Perry. And it's a great piece of work there.
Awesome.
So you were talking about the Twitters. We were talking about Facebook. We were talking about how people call the police when Facebook is down, which is, you know, we've all heard the story and seen the video and heard the recordings of the ladies, more than one, calling the police when they get 9 chicken McNuggets instead of 10 in their, you know, drive-through at McDonald's. and that's absurd. It's actually even more absurd for someone to call the police when Facebook is down, because technically the police could probably show up and do something and get you that extra nugget. They could probably come up and threaten, you know, someone at the McDonald's with a gun, you know, a threat of a gun, the possibility of a gun, to produce that extra nugget that you paid for. Or I don't even know if you paid for it. I don't even know if there's an X amount of nuggets you're supposed to get. But I don't think the police can do anything when Facebook's down. They can certainly spy on you on Facebook without a warrant. They can do that now. But the internet's like an act of God, man. It's, a lot of times when things are down, people are powerless over it. And even, you know, scientists at the data center are scrambling to get it back up. And, man, it's a force of nature and you can't really do anything about it. And the fact that I think about this small-mindedness and the dependence on the government of someone who would call 911 emergency because the Facebooks are down. It's astonishing and stunning and boggles the mind, man.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of one of the things that gets mentioned in this book that you had shared with me, the Future Shock. I'm totally going to find a copy of this to go through, because this is exactly some of the stuff that's been bugging me a lot lately.
Yeah, it's a book from the 70s, and I read it in probably, 1980, when I was a teenager, late teenager, probably about 16 when I read it. And it blew my mind. It's not a page burner. You know, it's not like the Laurel Canyon book that I read yesterday. It's not one of those, like, I can't put this down books. It's actually kind of dry and kind of reads like a doctoral thesis and may have been one. It's a miracle of publishing that this thing became a bestseller, because it was not written to be a mass market book. And some publisher got a hold of it. And I think even named it. I don't think that was the name of it. I think it was a term. I know it was a term used in there. The guy coined the term Future Shock in 1970 or late 60s for the thing that was happening kind of for the first time in technological history, where things were changing so rapidly. I mean, think about that. In 1969, there were people alive, like my dad, who's still alive. Well, there were people alive. There were cars when my dad was born. He was born in the 20s, but they weren't common like they are now. There were people alive in 1969 when that book was being written, who are watching a man land on the moon, who were alive when cars did not exist. Think about the mind fark that is, the over input. And he was talking about, you know, in the 60s, like the beginning of the mass availability of technology, of advanced technology. I mean, and computers were not massively available then. I mean, computers were like big things that took up whole floors of universities or government buildings that were like run by teams of scientists in lab coats and took, you know, overnight to come back with a result that you can get on your computer now in less than a second. But, you know, it was the availability of the start of like many color options for any manufactured item, personalization of color items, a massive communication from one point to another for the average person at a very low price or a lower price than had previously been available. You know, the world was becoming a smaller place really quickly and a far more complicated place. And he made up this word, future shock, basically for like the mental condition or the mental problem that it was giving some, especially older people at that time. And, you know, you kind of see it now. I mean, a lot of older people now can use computers, but it's like, you talk about Bitcoin to them and they're like, that sounds like something my congressman needs to outlaw. You know, they don't get it. And technology is moving faster than government can keep up to the point where it's kind of making government obsolete. Like anything that governments say that they can do, that they do, that they need to exist to do, can almost, most of them can be done with computers now, to the point where like you don't need a registrar of deeds, you don't need you know, somewhere to, it's all about control, it's all about ganking you for money, it's all about being able to scare you on the side of the road. And the old people, and I'm not being ageist, I'm 50, and there are people younger than me who have these who have future yeah. shock, you know.
Well, and look what happens to prisoners and stuff too, though. People that spend a decade or two in the prison cells and then they're released back into, you know, normal population, and they have no idea what all these little gadgets people are using are, how traffic's moving around so fast. They don't even know how to write an email to, you know, at one of their new upcoming jobs. They have no skills. They, I mean, you know, haven't been.
It reminds me of those Japanese soldiers that were found on remote islands, you know, a decade after World War II that were still fighting World War II.
Well, it's interesting. We had talked about this in the break. I go to a lot of concerts and festivals and things like that, and I can remember even within my lifetime.
People used to watch concerts. Now they photograph them.
Yeah, you see tons of cameras up. You see people yakking on their chromed robot turrets all the time. I went yesterday when I went to the Redneck Olympics. We were out in the middle of nowhere, so there was no signal. So I'd occasionally get a text or a message, and I couldn't reply to it.
That's why I like Corkfest, man. It was the most. I used the computer a little bit each night back in the hotel room for a half hour or so, but it was the most I've been off grid since, you know, 1996, probably.
Yeah. It's amazing.
There are stand-up routines by two of my favorite comedians, Doug Stanhope and Mark Maron, where they're both complaining about people in the audience using their chromed robot turret, you know, using their little phone. Doug Stanhope was just swearing at the guy. He was like, you know, what are you doing, man? You're like filming this, you're sending this to your friends? No, I'm right here. This is happening. You should watch me, you know. And and Maron has a similar thing.
So, meanwhile,
these kids, yeah, I love technology, but I don't need to live tweet everything while I'm out doing it.
Yeah.
If there's no video, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I like to say that, but I'm sarcastic when I say it. Yeah, it's sometimes true.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Talking about
on the Worms Network.
On the Worms. on the Genesis Communications Network through the Worms Network. That is our part of it. And we're talking about the idiots that called 911 because Facebook was down. But, you know, these – you ever see the movie Drugstore Cowboy?
Yes.
Negative.
Great movie. I highly recommend it. Matt Dillon plays a junkie who's robbing pharmacies to get drugs and – oh, ends up in all sorts of hilarious, horrible situations, one of which is trying to remove the dead body of a girl who overdosed from a hotel room where suddenly about 200 cops have shown up because it's suddenly, you know, he didn't know they'd booked the Sheriff's Association convention there a year in advance.
What was it called again?
Drugstore Cowboy. It's a good movie, man. You know, and it's not glorifying drugs at all. It's a kind of scary movie. It's way before Requiem for a Dream was a movie, but
that movie scared me so bad.
But that was a book in the 70s. That was a Hubert Selby book in the 70s. So anyway, we're talking about the idiots. There's a phrase in there, like, you know, Matt Dillon is probably 30 in there, and he's got this crew of younger guys that he's training to help. He and his wife, who are like 30, are trying to train this younger crew who are like 22. And they're really problematic. And he uses the phrase TV babies to describe them. You know, I mean, this movie was made 20 years ago, and he's talking about people who are younger than him. So the TV babies are the generation, pretty much probably us, you know, that grew up being raised by the television. And I think that the, you know, the smartphone babies or the chromed robot turd babies are the ones that are come up now. And I'm not necessarily complaining. You sent me a bunch of links of like, Seven tips to keep your cell phone from controlling your life. And, you know, how technology has come to take over our lives. Now, here's the thing. You sent me all these things. I'm not even going to read these. I'm just going to comment on the fact that this is a really common article. It's a different article by different people in different magazines and newspapers. But this article has been written regularly since about 1960.
And shared over Chrome robot turds.
Shared over chromed robot turds, which is what we call smartphones. Yeah, man, it's nothing new. And, you know, we are, you know, in our – how old – who's the youngest guy here? Is it you, Garrett?
I'm 29, yeah.
Okay. How old are you, Chandler?
36.
Okay, I'm 50. So
– 50.
But, you know, the 29-year-old guy even was complaining about these youngsters who, when you try to have a conversation with them, they're on their chromed robot turds tweeting to other people and they don't really hear what you're saying and it's not a real conversation. Maybe – let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Maybe those people are more evolved than us and we're wrong.
Well, here's the thing about that too. If it wasn't for this technology – and I'm not just talking about smartphones but like Skype and everything like that, I wouldn't be with my fiance right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we met at a similar location and then we were utilizing this stuff to be able to reconnect, you know, on a daily basis or whatever, where we finally moved in together.
And I met my wife on a dating service, and she lived, you know, a 20-minute drive from me, but I never would have met her because we didn't run in the same circles, and we're very happily married. You know, this show started as a podcast before it was on radio, and we probably never would have gotten on radio if we weren't doing it as a podcast first. I mean, I make films. I edit them on computers. I won't even say I'm guilty of being addicted to technology. I will say I am joyfully very plugged into technology. And I think if I'm complaining about young people being disconnected from the outside world and constantly tweeting to each other, I think I just might be, you know, the older generation who doesn't get it. You know, I'm not I've never been like really upset about, like, I've seen articles about, you know, technology controlling people's lives that also include, there's another related article that's sometimes folded into the same kind of article of English is dying as a language because people are speaking in tweet speak, you know, and it's like, I don't know, languages evolve. I can still write a complete sentence, paragraph, page, chapter, and book, and I do it often. So it doesn't really bother me, you know, so much. And it doesn't really bother me that young people do what we're talking about, because I don't really hang out with them. I don't hang out with many younger people. It's not my problem. I guess if you have kids and it bothers you, I could see why.
It's a little bit different take on that. I mean,
you have a 16-year-old.
Yeah, well, I have a 15-year-old, and she's very well-spoken, and she can think critically, but I've seen kids her age, and it just scares me for the future. I mean, if we're supposed to get all the work we do, we understand is generational, and we want to get humanity to evolve beyond the need for the state, and that's all good and well. But when children can't utilize simple interpersonal communication skills and can't write in complete sentences, it kind of makes you wonder where we're going. You know,
yeah,
like,
I almost feel like that. That's a good point.
That benefits the state.
Although maybe Google will replace the state.
Well,
they'd probably be positioned to do it, and they have they're working on drone technology, so maybe they could do it. They would have a vested interest to protect, you know, all of their users in a geographic location.
Yep.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep or sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only
$5
for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Say yes, sir. Yeah.
Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. So we're talking about Future Shock, the book and the concept from 1970, and how we're swimming in it now, man. Do you guys remember those ads? It's probably before your time, but it's like the lady's getting her nails done and the nail lady is talking to the customer about, keeping her fingers soft and the soap, the dish soap she likes to use. And then she says, "You're soaking in it now." And the lady pulls her hands out and she's like, "No, it's good for your skin, your nails." Do you remember that?
Is that like palm olive or something?
Yeah, yeah, man. Well, Future Shock, we're soaking in it now. We really are. And it's a double-edged sword. And we love it. And, the TV babies have given us, the TV babies, have given way to the chromed robot babies, or to the computer babies and then the chromed robot babies. I mean, there are kids today that, like, have never used a computer or, you know,
yeah,
like, maybe they have in school, but no, they do the whole thing on their little chromed robot turd. And the thing
that
is, those are not made... They're made for consuming media and sharing media. They're not made for creating media, which is why I use very inexpensive, very powerful desktop computers. I have a couple laptops, but yeah, man, I like my 16 gigabyte of RAM desktop that can edit, you know, can render a high def video in 8 hours, you know, a full feature length film, high def in 8 hours, and can render, you know, a Freedom Fiends audio episode in 2 seconds. So I'm going to read a little bit from this book, Future Shock. I found it on Google. You know, you can like search books on Google and read a couple pages. I'm going to read two paragraphs here. They're talking about a proposal for a computer system to prevent future shock. But it's interesting because this actually exists in everything we do now. And it kind of like encourages future shock. But it encourages the market. It encourages the fact that, you know, you can build a recording studio for $500 now. And there's globalization, good and bad. But there's the global market, which is good in a lot of ways. And, okay, let me just read this. Okay, and you got to remember, this is written before the World Wide Web. You know, this is written in 1969, like 79, 89, like 25 years before the World Wide Web even started, and before the internet really started. I mean, there was the ARPANET in 1969, the beginnings of it, of connecting, but it was just governments. It wasn't even, colleges didn't even really have it. So, you know, he's talking about computers that take up whole rooms, you know, that no one can afford, no person can afford. But he's saying, a case in point is the so-called Oliver that some computer experts are striving to develop. Oh, it stands for Online Interactive Vicarious Expediter and Responder. The acronym was was chosen to honor Oliver Selfridge, originator of the concept. So he named it after himself. Let me read that acronym again. Oliver, Online Interactive Vicarious Expediter and Responder. Oliver, in its simplest form, Oliver would merely be a personal computer programmed to provide... Now, personal computer, they didn't exist then. That's how like ahead of the time this guy was, okay? Would be a personal computer programmed to provide the individual with information and make minor decisions for him. At this level, it could store information about his friends' preferences for Manhattans or martinis, data about traffic routes, the weather, stock prices, etc. The device could be set to remind him of his wife's birthday or to order flowers automatically. It could renew his magazine subscriptions, pay the rent on time, order razor blades, and the like. As computerized information systems ramify, moreover, it would tap into a worldwide pool of data stored in libraries, corporate files, hospitals, retail stores, banks, government agencies, and universities. Oliver would become, thus, a kind of universal question answer for him. However, some scientists see beyond this. It is theoretically possible to construct an Oliver that would analyze the content of its owner's words, scrutinize his choices, deduce his value systems, update its own programs to reflect changes in his values, and ultimately handle larger and larger decisions for him. I mean, this exists in everything we do right now. Like, you know, Amazon goes, oh, you like this book? You may like that book. You know, everything about this exists already. And this is from 1970, man. This guy was very much ahead of his time.
Even though I can't find this book on Amazon right now.
Oh, I'm looking for it as we speak. I will find it. Do you have a Kindle?
It's because you're not as good at the Google foo of using the present day Olivers as I am. I found this in four key taps.
Yeah. Well, I did find it for $1, but the shipping is $3.99.
Even so, man, that's pretty cheap.
You know, that brings up another thing that kills me. I love technology and everything, but do you know it's so hard nowadays to find an old used bookstore?
Oh,
like
yeah.
it's either Barnes and Nobles or everything's digital.
You know, okay, here's the thing. Like we were talking about how every magazine every year has this article of these kids and their technology and like tips for finding balance in your life. There's also an article that you don't see that much anymore because we're at the end stages of it, but the article of what's happening to our local bookstores. I love that they're gone. I love Amazon, man. And it's kind of mean to say I love that they're gone because I don't love that they're gone, but I love that the market has spoken. And I guess it's kind of rough because, you know, a lot of people get sentimental about it because most people that ran small local bookstores genuinely loved books and were really the kind of person you'd go in and talk to and be friendly with. And they would be your Oliver. They would know your reading choices and they would suggest stuff. And there's usually a cat sitting in the sun in the window and that's pretty much gone.
I love Amazon and the variety of choices and everything, but I do miss that bookstore environment. I remember when I lived down in Florida, there was a bookstore called Haslam's and it had a big painted on the side over 300,000 new and used books, and it was basically a warehouse. And you could get, like, I like reading old books, and you could go in and get old books for like 50 cents.
I just hate waiting. I want to run to the store now and go pick up this book.
Yeah, you could walk into this store, find a cheap copy, and walk out and start reading it.
Yeah, my wife is very much the avid reader who loves to. I mean, we have probably 1,000 books on bookshelves in our basement, which is not like they're not moldering down there. It's a finished basement. And she loves books, and she reads them and rereads them. And she was resistant to the idea of a Kindle. You know, she was like, oh, I want to be able to actually touch the page. And then she tried one and she got one. And I haven't seen her. I don't think I've seen her holding a book since, man. She loves the convenience of it.
I love my Kindle. I have so many books on it. But you'll always see me carrying a paperback or hardcover book, though, along with my Kindle. I usually have two in my car.
But can I'll switch back and forth.
But can you get Future Shock on a Kindle? That's what I want to know.
I'm working on it.
That's what I'm looking up to.
You should be able to. I mean, it'd be kind of future unshocking if you could not. Yeah. I don't see it, though. Kindle. $9.99, Kindle edition. Here you go. Nope. This is a summary and study guide. It's not the book.
I actually have a Kindle app for my Chrome robot turd.
You know, I've actually emailed the author of Future Shock, Alvin Toffler. I sent him a fan email, and he wrote me back about 7 years ago.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I write fan letters to strange people. I don't write them to movie stars and rock stars. I haven't sent a lot of fan letters in my life. I've sent one to him, and I've sent one to the guy who invented the computer mouse and the guy who invented the World Wide Web. And that's pretty much it.
Al Gore?
Not Al Gore. Nope. So anyway, Future Shock. Thoughts?
I just... I'm surprised how hard it is to find this on the Kindle version.
Yeah.
driving me crazy.
Well, he talks in the book a lot about, in the future, things being disposable. Maybe his book has become disposable.
Yeah. Did you see the article I sent you, Future Shock at 40, what Toffler got right and wrong?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I sent it to you on Pigeon.
Let's look at that. Yeah. Okay, let's read what he got right and wrong, because I was talking about what he got right. Let's see.
I actually just ordered a new mouse.
Change is not merely necessary to life. It is life. I love that.
I love
quote.
That. I was just about to read that. That's great.
Yeah.
These are quotes from the offer, from the book. Technology feeds on itself. Technology makes more technology possible. That's true. The illiterate of the future will not be the person who cannot read. It will be the person who does not know how to learn. Now, I think that's what we're talking about with these chromed robot babies. Like, I don't think the chromed robot turds are responsible for solely for people not having deductive reasoning and being able to actually think and speak and write.
Oh, I would agree.
I think there's symptoms of it. I think that public schools are far more to blame for that.
Well, and parents as well. Yeah. I mean, it all ties together.
I got to say, my parents were pretty rural and rustic and never went to college, but they were pretty smart. And I got to thank my mother for teaching me to read before I went to kindergarten. You know, actually, like, I went to kindergarten, I could read. Here's what I'll say about public school. I did not learn anything after seventh grade that was useful in my life.
Here.
Yeah. I mean, literally, if I'd went, I don't know if I would have been ready to go out in the world after seventh grade, but, you know, everything I learned that was useful in later life after seventh grade, I learned on my own. And especially now that there is the internet. I mean, one of my favorite topics or pastimes is being up late at night and following down wormhole links on Wikipedia. I mean, I consider it a continuation of my college. You know, I'm self-collegeing myself.
Well, I didn't learn how to learn until after I got out of school, as a matter of fact.
Once you break that pattern, the whole you know, what is it, the Prussian model of education.
Yeah. Well,
the
Prussian model of education being showing up at the same place at the same time for a decade or more, sitting in neat little rows and rotely reciting the same things with everybody else at the same level. That is made to teach people to be soldiers or work in factories. Like, I'm not being specious. I'm not saying like, oh, all that produces is sold. That was made by the Prussians. That was that they invented that form of teaching to teach people to be soldiers and factory workers. And I kind of transcended that really early on. My favorite pastime when I was a kid, other than fishing and being outside and running around and doing all the things that they'd call the police if you did now, because kids can't do those things now, was going to the library and basically doing the thing I do on Wikipedia now in a library. It took a lot longer. Yeah, we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Redemption in the third act.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yep. And we come to the end of the show, and I'm so glad we've had this time together, but it's time for some redemption in the third act. But before we go there, Garrett Fox is going to promote a couple things that are happening around the Baltimore area. And we are on the radio in Woodstock, Virginia, which is driving distance from Baltimore. So go ahead there with your bad self, sir.
Yeah, that's close enough, especially if you're in that area and you like the Bitcoins. There's a Baltimore Bitcoin discussion and meetup. They do this once a month. The next one's coming up here on Thursday, August 7th at 7 o'clock at Bad Decisions. It's the very first.
I love that.
It's the very first bar in Baltimore to accept Bitcoin. So
and it's called Bad Decisions.
Yeah.
That's a great name for a bar, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't actually been down there yet myself, so I'm looking forward to it. And just if anybody's in the area listening, you know, you should come check it out. And if you mention that you heard about this on the Freedom Fiends, I will buy you a beer with Bitcoins.
Nice. Where can people find this on the internet?
Meetup.com. If you just go to meetup.com and search for Baltimore Bitcoin, you'll see it. It's the only one on
Excellent.
There.
So what else is going on in Baltimore?
Okay, so we've got this concert coming up called the Baltimore Shindig with headliners Jane's Addiction and Rise Against. Clutch is going to be there, J. Roddy Watson in the Business, a whole bunch of other bands too. But the thing I wanted to mention is our buddies, a local band known as Rebel Inc. from Baltimore themselves, have just announced that they are one of the finalists for a local bands. They do this contest every year for this the whole festival here, and Rebel Inc. is on there. I love these guys. They're great. They got a really good liberty message. They actually played at Pork Fest one year, and I think they're okay. So
wasn't there armed slam dancing? I think I saw a video of that when they yes. played it.
So on September 1st at the Auto Bar in Baltimore, they are doing their final tryouts for it to see who wins this band. So I encourage anybody who's a fan of Rebel Inc., a fan of Liberty in general, to come out to the Auto Bar. You can, you know, just Google the Shindig Music Festival and you'll find all the information you need
on
there.
Yeah, they're a lot like Rage Against the Machine, but without all the communism.
Yes, they've been compared to Rage Against the Machine a lot. Just
they
very
sound
high
exactly
energy.
Like Rage Against the Machine.
It's a very high energy like live show. I love going out to see these guys, and I always come home sweaty and
there's no communism. Absolutely no communism. Which is always a good thing. So we're talking about the TV babies and the chromed robot babies. The people younger than us. Well, we're the TV babies. We grew up on TV. I was a latchkey kid. Both my parents worked.
Yeah.
I had a key to my house. I'd take the bus home. And I'd go to my home and, you know, be there for 4 or 5 hours before my parents got home. They worked hard. But, you know, that basically meant that the television raised me. Although, we live 2 blocks from a pretty nice library. So the television and the library raised me, which is a lot cooler than just being a TV baby. And now you got these chromed robot babies, the kids that, they just sit on their tweeter boxes all day and Twitter to each other. You know, I've been at a bar in Wyoming and heard two like grizzled 60-year-old cowboys sitting at the bar. I went in to use the bathroom. I heard them sitting at the bar talking about some drama on Facebook. I thought that was kind of funny. That was cool.
That is pretty funny.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about like, you know, guys that wear cowboy hats. I'm talking about guys that like drove there from the ranch in their pickup truck and are actual cowboys. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. As far as all that goes, like I said before, I love technology and I utilize it quite often. But, and I'm going to sound cliche here, I know it was in all those articles, but you got to find that balance, you know? I mean, I try to spend, like, I'm fortunate enough in my job where I can go out hiking and do all that sort of thing, and I try to spend at least an hour or two outside every day, even in the wintertime. Like, in the summertime, I told you, you asked me if I had watched this show or whatever, and I'm like, dude, I don't have time for TV. I mean, I like to sit out in my yard and just listen to the birds and all that cool stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think you are judged by your actions.
You listen to the birds 8 miles high and Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah.
Yep. That book is covered quite well. I mean, that band is covered quite well in that book, Laurel, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, which I recommend. It's interesting. Yep. Also, the movie Mondo Hollywood, which is kind of an exploitation film trying to be a documentary, which is what a Mondo movie is. And that book is kind of a Mondo book. And, you know, the birds were manufactured as much as the monkeys, but that's not well known.
Yeah, there was a lot of bands that were.
Yep. And that book says they were manufactured by the government. But, hey, Google non-aggression principle. If you don't know what the non-aggression principle is, Google it. It's what kids need to know. If they have that, it doesn't matter if they're on chrome robot turrets or not. They'll be better people. So, non-aggression
principle. Worms.